show is definitely not diseased.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm up at Brooklyn, down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make
it. Done. Jake Locker. Oh, 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 Locker. Hey, hey, bop, bop, bop.
You back to that lot of people who maybe aren't progressive.
560 State Street. Walker with seven. Got a mismatch. Walker on the game with four. Kemba Walker. Step back.
Their only lead, the Timberwolves tonight, was at 2-0, trying to win it here. Love! Got it!
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Is that great basketball or what?
The Backdoor Cut Basketball Segment, KFAN.com, BringMeTheNews.com, at SportsMN, at BringMN on Twitter. Courtesy of Doug Fratelloni, Joe Nelson, Art Hughes, cast of thousands, millions, and then just you and me, Brett Cloutier, who is joining me from his new spot in Prince of Brett. What did you have for lunch today?
It's been well documented that I've lost a handful of pounds over the last
six. Soon to be put back on.
And they're soon to be put back on because I dropped $8.50 at Taco John's for lunch today.
Jesus.
Or more of like an early dinner by getting a meat and cheese and potato burrito and parlay that with a large thing of potato Lay's and a cup of nacho cheese sauce.
Did you just drink the nacho cheese sauce? I'm pretty sure you definitely did.
I took a potato wedge and got knuckles deep in the cheese and then ate it and then licked my fingers and did it again.
Oh, God. My God, that just sounds absolutely horrible. We're here for the basketball segment once again. Took the week off last week. Watched the men's Olympic basketball team and women's Olympic basketball team, Brett, an Olympic sweep of gold medals for the squads from the U.S. And I was saying, Brett Cloutier, I was going to open this up with Shook Ones from Mobb Deep back in the day and say how the rest of the world was shook, because they definitely were, judging by the domination, definitely the domination the U.S. women put on the rest of the Olympics, up by, I think, like 33 with 5 minutes left in the third or something in their championship game. My feeling, Brett, as we get right into the basketball segment here and talk Olympic gold medal game, coming up after that, we're going to talk a little bit of trade speculation from the world of the NBA and your Minnesota Timberwolves. Golden Gopher basketball talk will have to wait, perhaps next week or the week after, as we start speculating about their upcoming season and the class that they're bringing in of 2012 and 2013. Olympic gold medal game, Brett Cloutier on the men's side. You know, the score indicated it was close, 107-100, just never really felt like it was really in question. And it was close throughout. Like we're saying, I believe the U.S. was up one with going into the fourth quarter. And yeah, I just never had the feeling that LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Love, you name pretty much anyone up and down the roster except for Andre Iguodala, who I think looked pretty awful in these Olympics. Definitely him and James Harden, guys that obviously were just kind of throw-ins, and they pretty much knew they wouldn't see a whole lot of time. But I didn't think the top eight or nine on this team were going to let anything happen to this gold medal. And lo and behold, Brett Cloutier, U.S. does come away with gold, 107-100 over Spain, and looked very impressive in doing so. Pretty much throughout the tournament, the Lithuania game was the only one I really thought, having watched it, was really that close.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on the Spain game and the gold medal, because for about 8 minutes there in the third quarter, Pau Gasol absolutely went off, and he was stabbing at the biggest wound that this United States in 2012 United States team had, and that was a lack of interior presence. Tyson Chandler's Defensive Player of the Year, I get it, but he wasn't first-team all-defense, as has been well-documented on this very podcast.
Awful.
And then your next big guy was Kevin Love, and we all know, as Timberwolves fans, Kevin Love's a great rebounder, and he's a great offensive player.
Got a lot of time, too.
Defensively, especially protecting the rim, let alone rotating and defending the pick and roll, but defensively and protecting the rim, Kevin Love is an atrocious defender. He's just not good. It's his weakness. So when those are your two biggest threats to protecting the rim, you know you have a hole inside. So with defensive pressure, with Andre Iguodala, who I thought played well defensively, yeah, offensively he didn't bring much, Chris Paul, Darren Williams, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, et cetera, they really had to step up their defensive intensity. And because of the lack of size they had underneath the hoop protecting the rim. But Pau Gasol, when he went off in that third quarter, it had me kind of biting my fingernails, literally, because I thought that he was going to single-handedly beat this United States team by pointing out and attacking our biggest glaring hole on this team.
You know, and this was obviously a clash of, like you said, strengths versus weaknesses. And inside, of course, with Chandler, who down the stretch and for Boy, a majority of that second half, it seemed like, really wasn't seeing a lot of time. Kevin Love seemed like the Coach K's better option down the stretch. It seemed to me, like obviously with Ibaka, who, again, another guy that didn't see a ridiculous amount of time in that gold medal game, you have the Gasols. And by the way, I hate Marc Gasol now. I just can't stand him. He's too energetic. He's too fired up all the time. And he wants to make every little basket seem like he just won, you know, one gold medals, won NBA championships, saved his daughter from a burning building, whatever you want to say. But it makes it seem like, to me, that with that inside presence, you know, you did have those guys inside that were attacking Love, were attacking Chandler. That guard play, the wing play, it seems like that always is going to win out, and especially in Olympic basketball where the three-point line is a little closer, and as you saw, you know, Kevin Durant filling it up nonstop, and the U.S. taking 43 threes in one game and 38 in another or whatever the numbers were, just an inordinate amount of threes. It just seems like a regular jump shot for them. So it seemed like winning out throughout this Olympics was the perimeter play. Inside play is great and everything, but as you saw, getting that extra point when you can, and the U.S. took full advantage of that, really paid dividends, really made the difference. And while that inside game was very good for Spain, as everyone really knew it would be, this Olympics very predictable in that sense. U.S. Spain was pretty much who everyone had. Lithuania still being up at one point by two with like 4 or 5 minutes left. That was the one where I was sitting on my couch on a Sunday morning saying, "My God, it could be over." Spain, I don't know, I wasn't exactly feeling too much of a threat from them. When it came to the bronze medal game, Brett Cloutier, and this is what I love about Olympic basketball, it's win or nothing. I mean, you either are getting the bronze or you are going home with literally empty-handed, literally with nothing, and no one even remembers you were there. Andrei Kirilenko, our guy, said it himself, felt like a gold medal to us. AK-47 and Alexei Shved, two of your Wolves, taking home bronze. So three medals overall for your Minnesota Timberwolves, Brett, an absolutely successful Olympics.
Here's what I'm going to say first off on that Spain comment. Yeah. Do we know if Homeland Security has talked to Vinny Doniger about how he snuck on the Spain's bench there for the second quarter when he let Marc Gasol get his fourth out of five falls that you can get before you're ineligible in the second quarter? Do we know Vinny Doniger has been reprimanded for that?
In-game strategies, thinnest sports books, as you'll hear on the Backdoor Cut Variety Hour.
But yeah, no, I think it was nice for Timberwolves fans to see Russia get the bronze medal, but I'm not going to buy it that it was as big of a game as a gold medal or that it's win or nothing, because really,
Shred for the three to win it!
He didn't win a gold medal.
Oh, come on! Be happy for the Russians!
I'm happy for them, because Alexei Shved and Andrei Kirilenko took strides.
You're damn
so
straight.
They can really help this Timberwolves team maybe be a playoff team. But I just don't know if, I mean, Andrei Kirilenko's never played for a gold medal before. So how would he know what it's like to play for a gold medal? It's like Kevin Love saying the gold medal game was like a playoff game. How would he know?
And I'm sure his teammates wouldn't let him forget, since he is so worried about impressing his teammates with playoff appearances, that he's never been in a playoff game.
Well, how about Kevin Love not dancing either at the end of the game?
That was what I was going to get to next.
The king of unintentional comedy in this Olympics, well, Ryan,
it was, absolutely. But come on, how overblown was that? Like, I know people were laughing about it, but people were getting legitimately like upset that he wouldn't dance and he's raining on the parade. He must have felt outclassed.
You know, Kevin Love, that dude who sits like up against the wall at the party and sips like a Mike Sar lemonade and waits for girls who can't get with the superstars in the team to come walking by him.
Well, you and me know that better than anyone, having once...
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Walk 10 feet that way and come on back.
That's right. Damn, intentional inside jokes in the show. We shouldn't do that. But Kevin Love, yes, one that may perhaps stand back and let everything happen as he did in that celebration. AK-47 with bronze, Shred with bronze, Caleb with gold. Let me run down a few stats here. Tell me who your Minnesota Timberwolves MVP of these Olympics is. AK-47, 17.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 1.9 steals, 1.8 blocks. He's a flashback to his 2003-2004 self. He ranked in the top three in blocks and steals in these Olympics. Top 10 in scoring and rebounding. I mean, he did it all, Brett Cloutier. Alexei Shved had his ups and downs. 0 points in game one versus Spain. 4 points versus Lithuania. 2 versus Spain in their other game. But did put up 25 versus Argentina in that bronze medal game. Ended up averaging 11.5, 3.5 boards, and almost 6 assists. Kevin Love, we've been well chronicled, a guy that got a lot of attention in the American media, at least, as being a guy that needed to step up for the U.S. to get gold. 11.5 points, 7.5 rebounds. He had Chris Humphreys like assist numbers, averaged less than half an assist a game, but started out criticized, came out as a guy that was on top, was much lauded for his improvements, for the fact that he did step up when the U.S. needed him. Who is your MVP for the Wolves coming out of these Olympics?
The easy answer would be Andrei Kirilenko because he was
He's
the
a beast.
Point on a Russia team that won the bronze medal.
One gold. They think they won gold, though.
Who probably wasn't even favored to win a game in the elimination round. Honestly, no one could have thought they'd finish in the top four, so hats off to them. You know, you like to think of Kevin Love, too, because, you know, he was the center. He was the guy who played the whole second half, essentially, even when you have the defensive player of the year, Tyson Chandler, on your team, and you're getting torched inside. But Kevin Love was in there with Kobe, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, yeah. and LeBron James at the end of the game when yeah. it mattered. But I'm going to give it to Alexei Spen wow. because he was a point guard of the Russian team, and while he had some bad games, he controlled the pace. And as everyone knows, the game starts with the quarterback and the game starts with the point guard. You need your point guard to be working on all cylinders if you're going to make a good run in the tournament. And I think Alexei Spen's performance was much more surprising than Kirilenko's or Kevin Love's, and also was more valuable to their given team. I'm going to give Alexei Spen the MVP of the three Timberwolves in the 2012 Olympic basketball game.
I think I'd take the easy way out and go with AK-47, just because he did have such impressive numbers across the board. And it's not like you can say, let's say in the NBA, or let's even say in other sports, let's say in Major League Baseball, where you have the AL and the NL, or the there's the East versus the West in the NBA, and for that longest time, you had the East being just the AAA of the NBA, and now, of course, the powers have shifted a little bit. You've got the Heat. You've got the Knicks, who are trying to form like a big three, per se.
You got the Magic. Oh, wait.
Yeah, you have Dwight Howard. No, okay, you don't have Dwight Howard. But you have Andrew Bynum in Philly, and we saw the last week when that trade went down that he was so, so very happy to be in Philly, and he was almost shedding a tear. Fans were all over it. And obviously the things may have changed a little bit, but you still have had the two parallels for a lot of years that say, oh, well, okay, this, the East, oh, he's putting up big numbers in the East, whatever. Like, oh, okay, the NL, he's a great pitcher in the NL. Well, they have a pitcher in their lineup, but everyone plays pretty much the same schedule here in the Olympics. You're going to play the best teams if you do advance. So those numbers, I think, are extra impressive to me, especially coming off a year where he didn't play in the NBA. I think I would go with AK-47. Now, my question to you is, does this worry you from the standpoint of Alexei Shved having a few bad games, 2 points combined, as we said, against Spain? Who has Jose Calderon, a guy that's been in the league for a while, has Juan Carlos Navarro, a guy that sniffed the league for a little bit, Lithuania, who obviously has a few point guards that that team's been together for a while, but a few guys that have gotten some looks for the league. So do the fact that he had bad games against the Spains, the Lithuanians, do those worry you at all, or those few 20 plus point games that he had, are those enough to win you over in the fact that he will be able to score in the league?
I'm not going to compare Alexei Shved to Ricky Rubio by any means, but you look at Ricky Rubio, he'd have the games where he'd have 12 points and 14 assists. Yeah. He also had the games where he had 4 points with 1-7 shooting and had 4 assists with 6 turnovers. So he had his bad games. That's part of being a young player in any league. If you're a sophomore in high school, you're going to have really bad games. If you're a freshman in college, if you're in your second year in the NBA, if you're a 22-year-old playing in the Olympics in a bronze medal game that feels like a gold medal game, you're going to have bad games, and you're a young player. That's part of the territory. So it doesn't worry me too much. Now, after his third or fourth year in the NBA or in the 2016 Olympics, if he's still making those same mistakes, yeah, maybe we give up on Alexei Shved here in Minnesota, but I think it's just beginning. I think he's got a lot of promise, and obviously he's not the talent Ricky Rubio is. He's not the man with Ginobili, who he almost more compares to. He's going to be a solid NBA player at best. He's going to be a nice role player, maybe a sixth man, maybe a potential starting shooting guard if things go his way. But it doesn't worry me because he's a young player on a big stage.
Speaking of Manu, 19.4 points a game in these Olympics, third among leading scorers in the 2012 Olympics. Looking up and down the list, and this is where I'm kind of going with this, Brett Cloutier. I mean, you look at the guys, you look at the unknowns coming into the Wolves. You can look at AK-47 and say, well, Kirilenko looks good. Pardon me. He looks good at the moment. Don't really know how it's going to translate. You look at Alexei Shved and say, yeah, he had the ups and downs, and you're a believer saying he could be a sixth guy. Well, is there a ceiling above that? Is there a floor below that? And so you look at some of the leading scorers that came out of this Olympics, and right on top you have Patty Mills, 21.2 points, a guy that one of my small college guys that was facing off with Stephen Curry back when he was at Davidson. Patty Mills, a guy that now is on the San Antonio Spurs and had a few good games last game of the season for San Antonio. I think he dropped like 32. But then you look down the rest of the list, and it's everyone is a name you recognize. Durant, Ginobili, Pau Gasol, who led the previous two Olympics in scoring. Luis Scola, who was amnestied by Houston, now on Phoenix. Kirilenko, Carmelo Anthony, Leandro Barbosa, Luol Deng, Tony Parker, all pretty top-level NBA players. Barbosa had his good years with Phoenix, now has faded off a little bit since he left there, had a stint in Toronto. But looking at that list, I mean, that's a pretty impressive scoring list. And even looking back, 2008 Olympics, Gasol, Yao, Scola, of course, Yao before the foot injury, Ginobili, Dirk, Hamed Haddadi, who's even had a good couple years for Memphis, still in the league after 4 years, Dwayne Wade, Kirilenko, and LeBron. I mean, you're looking at all these, it seems more and more like this is a very good telling statistic of who is going to put up big numbers in the NBA. So you look at Shved saying, oh, he got 11.5. Look at AK-47 saying, oh, he was sixth in the Olympics in scoring. Look at Kevin Love with 12 points a game. All these guys look like this is a good indicator of NBA talent.
Well, you look at that for every, you know, Manu Ginobili or Tony Parker, very good two elite NBA players of the Olympics in the projects. Well, you have your Patty Mills. Sure, he scored a lot of points, but why is he only a backup point guard in the NBA? You look at
Holmes. Plays for Australia. Nobody's good on Australia.
Juan Carlos Navarro. You look at those guys. There's a reason why they succeed in the international style, but not in the American game. It's because it's zone defense that you get more open threes. It's because it's more of a team game. It's not as open floor. You can run zones. There's not as much pressing. So, yeah, for your elite players, yeah, you can tell if a guy's struggling. Like Kobe Bryant, he's missing jump shots. Those shots aren't going to miraculously start falling for him next season. They didn't fall for him this past season. But look at the guys like Patty Mills who breaked out in the Olympics, or maybe even the Alexei Spence. I don't think it's enough of a sample size to project how well they're going to play in the NBA game because, yes, it's basketball, but it is a definitive different style of basketball.
How is it not a good sample size? Look at those names up and down the list. Patty Mills is the only one that hasn't had success in the NBA. Look back to 2008, John Robert Colden of Russia, Samad Bahrami, and that's it. Those are the other two that haven't had success in the NBA. In 2004, Gasol, Yao Ming, and Ginobili were all in the top four. Only one you haven't heard of is Phillip Jones of New Zealand, who never touched the NBA. But, I mean, you're talking like 80% here that are succeeding at the NBA in a big way.
Yeah, but look at the 80%. It's your elite players. It's your guys who have already been four or five times All-Stars. So what we're arguing is the fact that if a guy who's an All-Star in the NBA, a guy who was an All-Star in the Olympics, is going to be an All-Star the next season. Yes, of course he is. Let's look at the sample size of a 66-game condensed schedule to project how good the next season is going to be. Because those guys who played great in the Olympics just played great this past season.
But you're looking at guys that aren't in the NBA. You can obviously look at stats from the 66-game season and say, oh, well, he played good, so he's going to be good in the Olympics. We're trying to project for guys that aren't going to be in the NBA. Look at the Ricky Rubios, for example. The guys that do have those bad games make me think that he's not going to be good and have put up like 2 points a game and 2 points and then like 12 assists in a game. And I'm like, well, he can't score. But and so you see him come over after not having any time in the NBA. And then and seeing, obviously, now with these projections, guys that are superstars in the league are in the top 10 of scoring, in the top 10 other categories, such as Kirilenko was. So you see the Rubios come over and do that. I think that's a good projector of where the Shveds are going to be, where the Kirilenkos are going to be.
What about Tyson Chandler getting torched by Paul Gasol? Is that going to show he's going to have a bad defensive season this next year in the NBA?
Defensively. You're talking about a top-tier guy against another top-tier guy, though.
Okay, so, but you say that's more that holds less faith on how they're going to next year than a top-tier guy against inferior competition?
I'd rather have a guy succeeding in any way, regardless of who they're playing. I mean, Patty Mills is playing up to everyone. I mean, this is a guy that I don't want to say torched the Olympics because Australia is terrible and they didn't go anywhere, but he's a guy that was expected to do something for Australia. He comes in, puts up big numbers, and so it's going to be a confidence booster. And when Tony Parker, since he is aging a little bit, of course, still one of the best quarterbacks of the basketball court, point guards in the league, You're going to have Patty Mills see more time, maybe putting up 21 points a game in the Olympics. Maybe Popovich opens his eyes and says, okay, this guy can score a little bit. Maybe we want Patty Mills and Tony Parker on the floor a little bit.
Is Luol Deng going to have a bad year for the Chicago Bulls because he was stuck playing with 11 drunk Manchester United players?
he was ninth in the NBA in the Olympics in scoring, and even with drunk Man United players, he would have been solid. He's one of the most best all-around players in the league, and you saw that in these Olympics. He performed exactly how he would have for the Chicago Bulls as he did with France.
Is James Harden going to have a bad year for the Oklahoma City Thunder? He's
playing on a team that's, quite honestly, in my opinion, better than the 1992 Dream Team.
Well, they're not.
But I think they are.
Go ahead.
Tell me why they're not.
Who would have guarded Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, and Charles Barkley?
That's the only good point on why they're not better. The guard play
is a good point.
It's a good point, but I mean, look at the modern day best team with big men. You have Pau Gasol, who is like a 9-time All-Star who led both Olympics in scoring previous. Marc Gasol is arguably better than his brother in the NBA, and Serge Ibaka is one of the best inside players in the league. So I think we did just fine against Spain.
And they can't hold a candle to two of the top six centers of all time in the NBA.
Very good point, but you're talking about guys, and you all you really have to do for me, because this is obviously never going to happen, and this is why we haven't argued about this, is because it's never going to happen. There's no way to solve it, so it's stupid. But
yeah, I'm right.
Well, no, I mean, you're not right. If you, all you have to do is watch video, speed of the game, all you have to do is watch the athleticism of players these days, they're just better in general. Like, the speed of the game, the talent of the players these days is better than the Michael Jordan talents of the past. LeBron James is going to go down if he wins 5-6 rings as a better player than Michael Jordan, and there won't be dispute.
Time will tell. The 92 team would have destroyed the 2012 team. I mean, they would have won by 20 points.
You're not backing it up with any fact. You're just saying that.
Yes, I did. The post-press.
You said one thing. You said one thing.
That's enough.
I refuted and you didn't say anything else.
Three things. Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, and David Robinson would absolutely destroy. Destroy.
Chris Paul, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant would destroy the point. Okay, so now we're even. So where are you going from there?
So Michael Jordan in 92 was at the peak of his career.
LeBron James at the peak of his career.
You can say LeBron is at the peak of his career in 2012. Michael Jordan in 92 was better than LeBron James in 2012.
Magic and Larry weren't at the peak of their career, and they get torched by Durant and Kobe.
Larry Bird and Kevin Durant has been the best player of that style since Larry Bird. He's an identical player to Larry Bird.
And he's better at this point in his career than Larry was at that point in his career.
Magic Johnson is better than Kobe Bryant at that point in the Olympics. So, okay. The post-presence just looms large. I mean,
It doesn't, though. And you saw why. Because just like against Spain, all you'd have to do is have guys camp outside the three-point arc, shoot it 43 times, make 19 of them, and the game would be over. You can argue all day about, oh, yeah, the inside presence, but 3 points is greater than 2 points, and that's what this team lived off of, and it got them a gold medal.
But the 92 team would score every single time down the court because
they'd shoot 100%. You're right.
Gasol just did. You don't think Michael Jordan's going to lock Scottie Pippen, one of the best defensive players of all time? They're not going to lock up.
All they have to do, go ahead, score every time down the court, since apparently a team can shoot 100% from the field these days, according to you. All you have to do is score every two or three times down the court if you're the U.S. Then that's the automatic advantage.
You act like they're going to make 66% of their
You act like they're going to make 100% of their twos.
It's more likely
that's what you just argued.
Twos than 66% of your threes.
Stop it. No one's ever shot 100% from the field.
We're forgetting John Stockton, Clyde Drexler, really?
Everyone agrees Chris Paul is better than John Stockton at that point in his career, this point in his career. Ask any of the experts, and they will tell you it's Chris Paul.
Stockton, in his prime, is the best. He's the best distributor of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
He doesn't need to score. He's going to break the pressure with Clyde Drexler, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird. They're going to break. They're going to destroy that pressure. And I'll even say Christian Laettner over Anthony Davis is a better player at the time.
Oh, my God. Stop it. Christian Laettner better than Anthony Davis. He wasn't. Davis. No. Because they were both fresh out of college. Davis is fresh out of college for a year. Laettner was fresh out of college. And Davis was one of the most dominant. And Grant, Laettner was a very good college player, too. But after 1 year, Anthony Davis was one of the most dominant inside men in the last since Shaq, since that year.
One-on-one at this point, I take Christian Laettner over Anthony Davis in a one-on-one game. Look at his numbers.
It's ridiculous.
He was phenomenal coming out of Duke. What he did with the Timberwolves? He was phenomenal.
6'9 and unathletic does not beat 6'10 long and athletic. It doesn't. It just doesn't. There's no competition at all. And
Christian Laettner is 6'11, 235 pounds.
Okay, well, look at your stats and your computer. So 6'11 versus 6'10. And again, Davis is going to cover with that wingspan. He'll cover the 6'11. Laettner can't jump.
Laettner was an elite college basketball.
So was Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis was. Yeah, I'm still giving Anthony Davis the upper hand. Do you know who went before?
Yeah, thank you. Anthony Davis the upper hand. Thank you. Anthony Davis the upper hand.
Do you know who went before Christian Laettner in that draft?
It's Shaq and Zoe. Yeah, Shaq and Zoe. Yes, I know. I'm aware. Every Minnesota Timberwolves fan knows that.
Christian Laettner was a better player this time.
Anthony Davis went number one overall.
It's two different drafts.
One of them's an overall pick, number one.
That's asinine to compare number one overall pick, number three. So you're saying that Darko Milicic is better than Carmelo Anthony because he went number two and Carmelo number three then. That's the same argument you're making.
No, not at all. One's the number one overall pick. Look at number one overall picks.
Jimmy Jackson going number four in that draft is just as good as Dwayne Wade went number four in 2003.
Jim Jackson was a good NBA player, to be fair.
He's nowhere near Dwayne Wade.
No, that's not what I'm arguing. So, number one overall picks. Look at him. Look at number one overall picks. They don't fail often. They don't fail often.
Christian
number three
Laettner
picks fail all the time.
At this point on the Dream Teams, and this is the end of the argument, Christian Laettner was a better basketball player than Anthony Davis. Look at what he did coming out of Duke with the
Look at what he did in the NBA. Look at what he did in the NBA. He dominated college. He didn't do anything in the NBA, and Anthony Davis will be a better NBA player.
I'm not arguing that because Anthony Davis hasn't played a game in the NBA.
Right, he'll be a better NBA player, therefore he was a better NBA talent. And NBA players do well in the Olympics, as you can see from the list I put together.
At this point in their career, Christian Laettner was a better player than Anthony Davis. All around, not defensively, sure. Anthony Davis is a better defensive player than Christian Laettner, sure. But all around basketball player, Christian Laettner is better than Anthony Davis at this point of his career.
Let's move on. Anderson Varejão. Or what is it, Bouma Fellaini? You should know how to say his name since you're the biggest Everton fan ever. Right. As you can hear on the Variety Hour, the Backdoor Cut on Meat Sauce's page, KFN.com. Is it Maro or Barmo? Mumbaro?
Marone? I don't know. We'll go with Marone.
You have no idea. Trades that were bandied about a week and a half ago, and this kind of piqued my interest, Brett Cloutier, not only because it's the middle of August and there's literally no Wolves to talk about, but because Anderson Varejão is a guy that's kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and don't read that any more than you need to. Pretty much his entire career, especially back when he was a hot commodity on the market, in like 2005, when he first came into the league, he was about 2-3 years in the league. He was playing next to LeBron, and everyone was saying Anderson Varejão. They wouldn't give him up for top tier players. It was JJ Hickson and Anderson Varejão. Those are the untouchable guys on Cleveland, and Anderson Varejão still stuck in Cleveland. This will be his ninth year in the league. Those of you that blinked and missed like the last 4 or 5 years of his career, you wouldn't be the only ones, because he hasn't played more than 31 games in the last 2 years. Granted, 66-game season last year, only played 25 games of it. It seems like the last time that anyone thought he was good, Brett Cloutier, and I really don't think this is too much of a stretch, and I don't think it's too much of a hard time to see why this is, was when LeBron was with him. And he has been, like we said, injury prone. So you can't blame him completely for that, but just another reason I wouldn't want to have him on the team. Especially if you have to give up, like we've talked about the entire offseason with Derek Williams, and his name continues to come up in trade rumors, especially if you have to give up Derek Williams. So it's Varejão for Luke Ridenour and Derek Williams. 29-year-old Anderson Varejão, who, granted, did average 11-11 last year in a shortened season, 25 games for him. For Luke Ridenour and second overall pick from 2 years ago now, I suppose two drafts ago, Derek Williams. And I couldn't take it. And I wanted to hear your thoughts. Your mind clearly isn't right today, but I wanted to hear your thoughts in general.
I wouldn't do it if I was the Timberwolves.
Would you really?
First off, and I'm not even going to touch, less obvious, but first off, you can't trade Luke Ridenour right now because you only have one point guard starting the season.
Right.
You can't consider Malcolm Lee a point guard in the NBA. He's a shooting guard. Maybe a spot point guard at best. But you can't go to the regular season only having J.J. Barea healthy. You just can't do it. Second off, Derek Williams still has all-star potential. He didn't have a rough rookie year, and as I've said over and over again, which has been well documented on this very podcast, Backdoor Cut, Meat Sauce's page, KFN.com, that Derek Williams, give him a full summer league training camp, exhibition season, and give him time in the regular season. Give him a full season, he's going to have good numbers. He's going to show promise, and he's going to show that elite potential that he had coming out of Arizona. Anderson Varejão is nice, and he could play center for us next to Kevin Love, but Anderson Varejão's biggest strength is rebounding and hustle. Well, that's a lot of what Kevin Love thrives off of. So that's kind of Kevin Love's style. Do we really need two guys doing the exact same thing on the defensive and offensive end of the floor?
Well, and here's my question, too, as you talked about the depth. I didn't even get into that. So everybody's been big on Peck, so are you automatically just going to slide Peck to the side and say, well, suddenly you're back up, even though, I don't know, for the last 6, 7, 8, 9 months, and granted, I'm not a Peck guy. I don't think he's going to be a starting center in the league. I don't think that the 3 months he had in the middle of the season last year are enough to warrant giving him a starting spot, handing it to him on a silver platter next to one of the best big men in the league. I don't think that's legitimate. So if you bring in Varejão, would I be against it from that standpoint? Not necessarily, but from an organizational standpoint, all you've said is that Nikola Pekovic, okay, you showed it. Darko, amnesty, see you later. We're going to have one center on our roster, it's Peck. They're not bringing in a guy, if you give up a number 2 overall pick from two drafts ago, and Luke Ridenour, to back up Peck. So it looks like what would happen, 6'11 Anderson Varejão, and that's tall enough to play center in this league. I don't see the problem. The league, as many have said, getting smaller. So I don't see the issue there, but I do see the issue with everybody. All of a sudden, it seems like what this organization has been about, Derek Williams is untouchable. Now he's on the trade block. Nikola Pekovic is our starting center. We're actually going to trade Derek Williams and get in a new starting center and slide Peck to the side. I don't understand it.
It doesn't really make any sense. All these Derek Williams trades have never made sense to me. I think it's all a smokescreen. I just don't get it because Derek Williams is going to – he has – like I said time and time again, I'll say that he has all-star potential. We need to give him a full season. And Anderson Varejão doesn't fit because he's, like I said, similar to Kevin Love. But, yes, I'm a Nicole Pekcik guy. You just signed Greg Steen's money. Yeah, $3 million. That's a substantial amount of money. That's money that could have been allocated elsewhere.
Doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It makes zero sense of why the Timberwolves would make a play for Anderson Varejão, given their point guard depth, given Derek Williams' potential, and given what they already have, the center position. By signing Greg Steensma, you have locked up and solidified your center position for this season, and even with Kevin Love probably going to be playing a lot of five in crunch time this season for the Wolves.
So you don't then you slide Anderson Varejão out of the four? Like, this just, I don't, it doesn't make sense to me.
It makes no sense. It doesn't add up to me.
Go watch some 2012 Olympic Dream Team footage and then tell me, come back and tell me how you feel next week.
Quick question. Christian Laettner has scored 18.2 more points per game this rookie season than Anthony Davis ever has.
That's not fair. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's
18
fair.
18 points per game for Christian Laettner's rookie. He had
a number of... You want Christian Laettner on the team rather than Derek Williams?
Why was he so... Because it was going against Zoe and Shaquille O'Neal, who were, like, revolutionary centers.
Well, of course. Yeah, well, that is the reason he was three. That
in 4 years in Minnesota, he had 18.2, 16.8, 16.3, 16.4, and 18 in the season they traded him.
He was an all-star that 18 year. He had one All-Star appearance, and granted, being an All-Star back then seems a little harder than being an All-Star at this point. But yeah. I mean, well, of course, in any other draft, Leighton we're going on first. The shot, the fact that he put up a great college career. Davis is just a different kind of animal, and the players in general. And this is the point you're missing. The players in general these days are just different, more athletic, more evolved, more polished, and maybe not more fundamental. I'm not going to say that they don't play the fundamental strong passing, the mid-range jump shot, the dream shake in the post. They don't do that stuff, but they're just overall miles and miles ahead talent-wise, in my opinion. Hey, and believe me, I spit in the face of that argument before these Olympics started, but having watched the team, then watched video of the 92 Olympic team, I can't help it.
You know what they didn't have in 1992?
What?
They didn't have Twitter, because if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow my co-host Mike Gallagher at Mike_Galley21 or myself at Brett Cloutier Deuces.
The Mike Gallagher and Brett Cloutier on Facebook on KUG. The Backdoor Cut, that is, of course. You can find us there, The Backdoor Cut, with Mike Gallagher and Brett Cloutier on KUG. That was, of course, before we came to KFN.com. We got a very lucrative contract.
Contract, not lucrative, nor contract.
And on Twitter, as Brett Cloutier, you can find us there. You can also find us on KFN.com. Meet us page, bringmethenews.com, at SportsMN, at BringMN on Twitter. And you'll find this podcast right there on the sports page tomorrow, bringmethenews.com. And happy State Fair. Enjoy the State Fair this week. And we'll be back next week to talk more basketball, probably argue some more about stuff that will never be resolved. That's Brett Cloutier, I'm Mike Gallagher, and we'll talk to you next week. From here, with a little ambition, just what we can become here. And as the father passed the story down to his son's ears, younger kid, younger every year. Yeah, so if you love me, baby, this is how you let me know. Don't ever let me go.
That was 2 hours with you, which is probably the reason why I've had enough tonight. Time out.
Would you like to taste my smoked meat log?
Yeah, or at Duke. Yeah, Duke's being lead. Yeah, who cares?
Nice play. Pushed him off the block. Stole the ball, and here he comes again. Jack kind of probably upset on the scrape down to the box area, but Royce turns to the fans, and why not? He deserves the accolades. All set up by great defense. Royce to the chin. Send it in with that motor.
Bravo! Oh, ho, ho! Up high, down hard. Rajon Rondo.
You see a lot of people who maybe aren't progressing.
Buckle up for Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant just sucked the gravity out of the target center.
Okay, bye-bye. Forever, forever.